Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first update I have for you is actually about LQ Radio itself. For those of you who don't use a podcatcher to listen to these broadcasts and actually go to the site, you'll notice that last week we added a direct link to the AUG file. As an obviously ardent supporter of open standards, we're proud to place the link front and center on equal ground with the MP3 link. And in fact, to be honest, it's probably long overdue. Now, we've always offered OAUG Vorbis file, we just didn't link to it prominently enough, and I'm glad that we made that change. Related to this, at this time, we don't have any short-term plans, at least, to offer an OAUG RSS feed, as unfortunately, nearly none of the current MP3 players support OAUG fully. And we, of course, hope that changes as much as you do, and if it does change, we'll, of course, reconsider that decision. The next story I have is LinuxQuestions.org turns 6. As I just announced today in the forums, LQ recently celebrated its 6th anniversary. Now, the site continues to grow at really what is an astounding rate. And it's not just the 2,311,325 posts or the 254,019 registered members that we have at the time that I wrote the numbers down to do this podcast. You take other things like LQ ISO, which is just about to hit 2 million downloads, the LQ Wiki, which has just shy of 3,000 articles. Pretty much every aspect of the site is just growing beyond our wildest expectations. That's not what's remarkable to me, though. What is remarkable to me is that, despite our long-term, extremely rapid growth, we've managed to stay both true to our roots and extremely friendly to the Linux newbie, and I think that really is key. So while it's true that your post may scroll off the main forum page quicker than it used to, the site still retains much of the feel and air that it had, let's say, 5 years ago. And that is something that I'm truly proud of. I'd like to thank each and every LQ member, and also the mods, for making the site what it is today. Now on to the news. First story I have is Marvel buys Intel's handheld processor unit. So it looks like Intel has divested its, quote, communications and application processor units to Marvel Technologies for just about $600 million. Intel had invested significant amounts of cash into some of these units, and the PXA Xscale-based line was particularly popular in Linux-based devices and products. And on a side note, they also powered the latest Trio and BlackBerry. The processors failed to generate the market share Intel had hoped for, though. With nearly a billion cell phones due to ship next year, and countless billions in investments already sunk into the projects, Intel finally decided to pull out of the market, which Texas Instruments dominates pretty handily with almost 70% of the market. So I guess Apple isn't going to get that one-stop shop I had speculated about in the podcast a while back. What may be worse for Intel here, though, is that their little foray into this market may have taken their eye off the ball just long enough for AMD to gain the ground that they have been vying for in Intel's core market for so long now. And if you'll notice, over the last, let's say, year or so, AMD has made significant inroads with its Opteron processor. Luckily for Intel, they have a humongous cash cow to fall back on. The next story I have is EU poised to rule against Microsoft. After being successfully prosecuted by the Department of Justice, but then escaping any serious punishment by a new incoming administration, it looks like the EU may actually be following through with some bite to its bark. With the 2 million euro per day fine, which is about 2.5 million US dollars, potentially being backdated all the way to December of 2005, the amount of money here could be substantial. One item I've seen incorrectly reported in multiple venues is that the EU is forcing Microsoft here to open the code for Windows. Now that is categorically not the case. They are asking for open and usable documentations on APIs and interfaces that are not license encumbered, along with the unbundling of Media Player. In fact, Microsoft offered the code under an NDA and with a license, and that was turned down by the EU as an unacceptable resolution. After the Department of Justice case a while back, it appeared that once a U.S. company reached a certain size, even the government couldn't do much to either monitor or govern its actions. So it's good to see the EU at least taking a stand here. One kind of comical sentiment I continue to see in comments around the web are things like, Microsoft should just pull out of the EU altogether. Now that's astoundingly short-sighted and extremely ethnocentric, almost to the point that I find it hard to even rebuke here, but it should be obvious that pulling out of a market that is so huge and really has so much clout would immediately spawn the adoption of alternative operating systems and applications that it's pretty much asinine for Microsoft to even consider this as an option. The day they pulled out would be the day every hardware manufacturer from Dell and HP all the way down the line announced preload support for Linux, and the day nearly every software maker would announce the port of their product to Linux. There's just no way that Microsoft is prepared to let that happen. Another article on this topic, and this one was in Beta News, and this was commenting on the report, the Americans for Technology Leadership, a consumer group of 40,000 members, which said that, quote, "All American companies doing business in Europe should be concerned. This development makes clear that successful American companies will face a higher regulatory standard in Europe, and that their entire global business strategy may be hostage to the whims of a few European regulators," end quote. The hostage to the whims of a few European regulators is, I think, a little bit dramatic, but if you're an American company who chooses to compete in the EU, why would you not expect to have to comply with the regulatory standards of the EU? I think that just makes sense. Now, if you think the EU is bad, wait until you try to see what it takes to get into China. The next story I have is another Microsoft exec jumps to Google. And that's the title of a Business 2.0 article, which had the following to say. Quote, "Another prominent Google fighter leaves Redmond. This one concludes, if you can't beat them, join them." Vic Gundotra, who's a general manager for platform evangelism at Microsoft and a 15-year employee, has agreed to join Google after first spending a year working on charitable endeavors. End quote. While Vic's not as high on the org chart as some of the other recent departures at Microsoft, he was integral in the recent Microsoft push to attract developers. He's also the one, it should be noted, who hired Scoble, whose last day, ironically, at Microsoft is today. It seems that Vic won't be able to start at Google for 1 year due to a non-compete clause in his contract, and his role at Google isn't even defined yet. I think Google was just happy to have someone of his caliber come on board, and as the next year goes, they'll pick a place for him. When his non-compete's up, they'll have something for him to do, I'm sure. Mini Microsoft is also reporting on the departure, but also adds that a widespread reduction in force may be coming at Microsoft in the coming days or weeks. Along with the news yesterday that Microsoft is moving a bunch of existing execs around, the writing on the wall is clear. Some major changes are going to be taking place at Microsoft in the very short and near term. Whether those changes revive the company or are the beginning of a slow decline into a maintenance mode company, that remains to be seen. The last story I have for you is Google launches Checkout, and I do have a few other Google musings kind of mixed into this one. After months and arguably years of speculation, Google Checkout has finally been officially launched. The release is, as you'd expect, being covered up pretty much everywhere, including the New York Times and TechCrunch and pretty much everything in between. One thing I'd say is being consistently misreported, and this is especially by the mass media types, not the more technical TechCrunch types, and this is my opinion, is that Checkout is a direct PayPal competitor, or the one quote I see a lot is PayPal killer. While it's true that Checkout is a way to accept payments, it doesn't have the person-to-person functionality that PayPal has, nor many of the other features. It's simply a slightly different beast than PayPal, and it's more akin, really, to products like Microsoft Wallet, and I believe Yahoo also has a similar product already. That being said, this does, of course, target many merchants that currently do use PayPal, and there's clearly a good amount of overlap. If you're a long-time follower of the site, you know that I've had my personal problems with PayPal in the past, and if nothing else, this move should serve to make PayPal clean up their act, which I think is long overdue. It'll be interesting to see if either PayPal or Google eventually move their respective services to be considered as a banking service. While this would open them up to quite a bit of regulation, it would also quell the fears that many people have with these kinds of services. And this stands especially true for PayPal, which allows you to store money in their account and therefore carry a balance, which really how that's not considered a bank, I'm not really sure. At least in its current incarnation, Google does not allow people to carry a balance in the way that PayPal does. The one thing that worries me about this system is that as Google continues to add new services to their lineup, they do so under a unified Gmail username. Now that means if your email username and password get compromised, you could be in a world of trouble now. In fact, your credit card is directly tied to this, so, you know, sky's the limit from there. Considering that most people are way, way too lax with their email credentials, and I even see people using like unencrypted protocols over shared Wi-Fi or an airport Wi-Fi, this could just be a recipe for disaster. Now onto the actual service. Checkout is, quote, a checkout process that you integrate with your website, enabling your customers to buy from you quickly and securely using a single username and password. And once they do, you can use checkout to charge their credit card, process their orders, and receive payment into your bank account. End quote. And that was from the Google checkout site, which is just checkout.google.com. Unlike PayPal, you can't use the service to pay for goods without an account. And if you'll recall back, PayPal was actually like this for a long time. As it stands now, you can put a PayPal link up on your site, and the person buying something doesn't actually have to have a PayPal account anymore. They can just use their credit card for a one-time payment. Like most Google offerings, the API here looks pretty nice and pretty comprehensive. What's more, and this is, I think, one of the compelling things about and could turn into one of the more controversial things about the offering, is that if you participate in Google AdWords, which generates the lion's share, of course, of Google's revenue, you stand to potentially use Google Checkout for free. How it works is, for every $1 you spend on AdWords, you can process up to $10 for free in checkout. It should be noted, however, that an AdWords account is not a requirement of using this. You just kind of get that spiff if you use them both. This marks a turning point for Google in a way. While checkout is very clearly tied closely with AdWords and will certainly increase the amount of users that advertise in the Google network, it represents the first real alternative income stream that Google has added in a very long time. And this could be seen as good and bad. Of course, you don't want 100% of your revenue coming from a singular place, and it's not 100% right now for Google, but it is in the 90s, and I think the high 90s at that. But the setup where most of your income does come from one stream allows you to focus your energy really with laser-like precision. The more revenue streams you have, the less focused you become. And now, with this move, I think Google struck a pretty good balance. Considering the two streams are pretty intertwined, I don't think they're going to lose too much focus here, and that, I think, is a good thing. But that focus issue brings up another interesting point with Google. Google has traditionally been, and despite their growing size, a very nimble company that has a very distinct corporate culture that's pretty much all its own. As they continue to grow and continue to add these quote-unquote seasoned veterans, and from the likes of Microsoft and other big players no less, one has to wonder if they can keep their culture and innovativeness intact. See, these seasoned veterans, they come with a lot of history and a way of doing things that is really steeped into who they are. And it's hard for people to change. And there's a very real chance that as the number of these types of employees grow, Google will become less nimble and more stodgy, more bureaucracy, and more people doing things the way other companies tend to do things. The good news is there's certainly no sign of this yet, and Google somehow has an odd way of avoiding the pitfalls that they seem certain to have to fall into, but this has to be something that's on the minds of both the Sergey, Larry, Eric triumvirate, and of course, Sergey and Larry are the two founders, Eric's the current CEO, and also the lower-level Google employees. You see, the seasoned veterans are going to be sandwiched in between these groups. They're going to tend to be upper managers that fall directly below the triumvirate, but above the average Google employee. So, that being said, this is a topic I'll certainly keep an eye on moving forward. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us. Thanks.